Vices Radio Network.
Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally, and you are listening to episode number 79. Guys, I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be back. I'm always happy to be doing another episode of Advices Radio, and I appreciate that you are all listening. So thank you for being here with me, and thank you for all of your feedback, your comments, and your posts, and your messages over at Instagram and Facebook. It means a lot, and I take all that stuff into consideration. I'm trying to get all the guests that you guys want to hear. If you're doing one of the fall shows and you're doing your cardio right now as you listen, keep going. You're almost there. You can have some pumpkin pancakes after, but until then, it's time to grind. So let's get grinding. Here we go, guys. Today we have two interviews. For starters, we have a guy that I've looked up to for a really long time, Dan Solomon. He is a leader in the bodybuilding and fitness media world. You know his voice from the Arnold Classic and the Olympia webcast. If you are a guy like me that's been listening to podcasts since forever, then you remember Pro Bodybuilding Weekly. I think that might have been the first bodybuilding podcast ever. And I remember listening to that show back in like 2005. Him and Bob Chick, they just had such great charisma. He's been the recipient of the Lifetime Achievement Medal from the IFBB, and actually Ben Weider had presented that to him. He's the co-executive producer for a brand new feature film coming out in October, Bigger, the Joe Weider Story, and he is the editor-in-chief over at digitalmuscle.com. Dan is a consummate professional and has set the bar as to what high-quality bodybuilding media should be, and I am grateful that we have him here on the show today. After that, we will speak with Jonas Jytrus, NPC Super Heavyweight. I just had an opportunity to see him compete at North Americans. He is a client of Dave Kallax, and now they are getting ready for Nationals. So we are going to talk about the plan that they used to bring him in totally shredded and grainy for North Americans and what they're going to do differently for the next show. We're also going to hear all about his life and how he works bodybuilding into being a normal person who makes a living like everybody else. All right, guys, let's get to this program. Once again, thanks for listening, and I hope you have a great day. All right, guys, and with me today, it is my great honor to have on the show Dan Solomon. Dan, thank you so much for being with me. You don't know how much this means to me.
Scotty, thanks for having me, brother. It was great to see you in Vegas at our big event, of course, a couple weeks back, and what a great night that was. And congrats to you. I know you've been at this for a while, and you've always had such really kind things to say about me, and it hasn't gone unnoticed, so I appreciate it, and congrats to you on all the great work you're doing.
Well, thank you. That means a lot, and hey, I really appreciate you taking the time to say hi as I introduced myself, and I got to meet you and your family there right after the press conference, so thanks for that, man. It was really cool.
Well, it was great seeing everybody. That's one of the cool things about going to the Olympia. A lot of times, and let's face it, we're all guilty at different points of the year. We complain about certain aspects of the industry, and you know, we always have things to say as the year goes. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, sometimes it's frustrating. But we get out to the Olympia, and it's a reminder of sort of what we all love about what we do. We get to connect with people, connect with the fans, connect with the athletes, connect with the production value, and all of it. Of course, Robin Chang and his team at the Olympia, they've created something really incredible. And when you're out there and you're a part of it and you see the big budget production value and the sound and the lighting and all the things that go into Olympia weekend. Of course, the, you know, tens of thousands of people who flock to Vegas. It's sort of one of those things where you get on the plane, you fly home, and you feel good about what you're doing. And I know that's the cool part about it, getting to, you know, meet folks like you and kind of just remember that this is not just a business. This is also a personal experience. And it's it was cool meeting you, and I appreciated you coming over. It was fun.
Wow. Yeah, I can tell you've put some thought into this, man. I know that the Olympia has been a big part of your life for a long time. We, you know, we have a new Mr. Olympia. Before we get into all this, I got to ask you, what are your thoughts on how this year went?
Well, it's funny. So there's always those moments in bodybuilding history that sort of stand above the others, right? And those moments are usually when a brand new champion is crowned. When you look back over the annals of bodybuilding history and you have, you know, the night Jay dethroned the great Ronnie Coleman, and you remember that crazy chorus of fanaticism in the building that night when that happened.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when Phil took out Jay, and then when Dexter shocked the world and stepped in for a year and became Mr. Olympia. And over the course of the year, look, we've been doing this for over a half a century, and I should say the Olympia has been going on for over a half a century, and there's only been 14 times where a new champion has been crowned. And I think when that happened, when the announcement was made, when Bob Ciccarello received the envelope and he read the results and we all learned together that the champ had gone down and Sean Roden had been crowned Mr. Olympia, that always incites a different level of energy.
Oh, yeah.
And it was cool. Now, of course, for me, and I'll pose this question back to you, Scott, when that energy and that crazy ovation and everybody erupted and came to their feet, when that happened, my first thought was, were they cheering because a new champion had been crowned, or were they cheering because the reigning champion had lost? And, you know, was this a disdain for Phil, or was this a celebration of Sean? Or I'll take it one step further, if you really want to put your thinking cap on. Was it the fact that a certain type of physique was being celebrated? Because let's face it, Sean Roden's look, his aesthetics, his proportions are very different than many of the recent bodybuilding champions who have these massive jaw-dropping, eye-popping body parts, where Sean doesn't really have that. Sean has a beautiful physique.
Yeah,
it was awarded appropriately so. I probably would have had Sean Roden winning the contest if I were at the judges' table. But nonetheless, he brings something very different. And some people have told me that maybe that's the reason why there was that chorus of excitement, because that type of physique, a throwback to a look that people really want to see returned to the sport. So again, it's a lot to think about, a lot to digest, but to answer your question, I love the weekend, and seeing a new champion crowned was pretty cool.
That is a lot to digest. Tell me, what do you think of this? Because I feel that it may be a combination of many of those factors. I don't know how many people I heard personally that were saying, hey, I really hope that Sean Roden pulls through this year. I've heard of people saying, hey, I hope that Big Ramy could do it. You know, I've seen a lot of supporters of various bodybuilders on that stage. Sean Roden doesn't strike me as the people's champ, though, the way that Rolly was. I don't know so much if it's that they wanted Sean, but maybe they did want that physique, and maybe they did want to see change. I could see that things as definitely being a big factor.
That's well said. I would actually take it a little further, and I would pose this question back to you and anybody who's listening. Nobody showed up in Vegas Olympia weekend thinking there was a possibility that Sean Roden was going to be Mr. Olympia. Now, of course, other than Sean Roden and maybe Chris Aceto, nobody else felt that was a probability or even a possibility.
No.
Now, I did run into a couple people who made some bold predictions. My buddy Giancarlo over in Italy, a few others had some takes on Sean Roden, but nobody really bought into Roden as you arrived to Vegas. Now, of course, the minute you saw him, you realize, wow, this is very, very interesting, especially the way the improvements that he made and combined with some of the issues that Phil is dealing with in the midsection. So it became obvious that it was a reality that we had to keep an eye on. But here's my thought back to you. Sean Roden, bless his heart, he is very understated. He's very quiet. Interviewing him is a very different experience. He does not say a ton. He's an extremely nice guy. I can't say a bad word about Sean Roden, but at the same time, I can't say much about Sean Roden because he's one of those guys that we really don't know. Like, if I were to ask you to write down on a piece of paper 10 things that you know about Sean Roden, you'd probably have a really hard time doing that because his story is not out there. Jay Cutler, we knew his story. He was that blue collar guy from Massachusetts who, you know, kind of, he was that perennial runner up, that underdog, that blue collar champ. We knew his story. We knew where he lived. We knew about his wife at the time. We knew all of it. Yeah. And we knew about his whole world. In the case of Sean Roden, it's like, we don't even know him. And yet he is the number one bodybuilder in the world now. So it's a very unusual dynamic. Even Dexter, we knew a little bit about Dexter because Dexter had been around for a long time and we kind of knew his story and he had sort of, you know, like him or not, you kind of knew what Dexter was. Honestly, I've been in this industry for a long time and I probably haven't had more than 20 minutes total of conversations with the guy who's currently our Mr. Olympia champion, which is kind of funny, but it's a whole different situation this year with Sean. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's cool. It just kind of makes everybody realize that you just never know what's going to happen. We think we have it figured out. You know, it's going to be Rami. It's going to be Phil. And as it turns out, it's none of the above.
Yeah. Those are some interesting things to think about. While we're on this topic, where do you think we're going to go in the future? I mean, we've got this new Mr. Olympia, completely different aesthetic. And he's somebody who hasn't been a domineering force. He's not the guy who's been like Jay Cutler, knocked at the door for year after year until he finally got it. This is a guy who's been up, he's been down, he's been back. He hasn't shown us a ton of consistency. It's a little bit early, but do you have any predictions for us on what's going to happen in the future?
Look, realistically, is he going to win again? I wouldn't think so. But I say that, he's 43 years old. He'll be 44 when he steps on stage next year. Do I think a 44-year-old bodybuilder who has never really given us what he gave us last week, do I think he's going to have the goods to fend off the charges, you know, of guys like William Bonac and Big Ramy and even the potential of Phil Heath figuring it out and coming back? And of course, there's others out there that are sort of looming and climbing the ladder. I don't see it. I would have no problem seeing Sean continue to rattle off a couple. But I don't see it. I think somebody else will come along and take it. It was funny when I was interviewing Sean Roden for the webcast that we do every year, right after the event, he's standing next to me and I love talking to him. Just a great soul, a really good person, a really good family man, great guy to talk to. Even though he doesn't say a ton, but he's a good, genuine guy. Yeah. But I'm looking at him and, you know, I'm used to standing next to like Phil Heath after he won, or Dexter after he won, or Jay after he won, or Ronnie after he won. And they would have these, you'd look at them and you'd see those shoulders and those massive arms and the triceps popping out all over the place and just extreme levels of muscularity, rich, dense, thickly muscled Mr. Olympia champions. And then there's Sean Roden, who has this beautiful physique, tremendous, you know, flow and insertions and the midsection and the deep muscle separation. A deserving champion. This is not a slight at Sean whatsoever.
Sure.
But being up close to Sean Roden is a different experience than being up close to some of those other guys where you just can't believe the level of muscularity that they present. And it's just a different thing. So to me, it's hard to believe. I mean, even when you look at Phil, this is a great question. I would ask this of anybody. Let's just say you didn't know Phil Heath. You had never seen him before in your life. You didn't know Sean Roden. You'd never saw him before in your life. You hadn't established any preconceived feelings about their personalities, about their bodies, about anything. And you just arrived on the planet Earth the day before that Olympia.
Yeah.
And Phil Heath walks out and he stands next to Sean Roden. Now, keep in mind, we have a tendency of when a bodybuilder shows something great and then they come back and then they don't show us that greatness again, a lot of times we're quick to dismiss them.
Sure.
But imagine if you had never seen either of those guys before and you never knew what Phil Heath's midsection used to look like. And you never knew anything about Sean Roden and you just watched them go pose for pose. I think people would look at it a little differently. Phil brings a lot that other bodybuilders don't bring, even with the issue with the midsection. And I think, I'm not saying Phil would have won, but I'm saying people would probably have a slightly different view. But because he was a seven-time champion, because he's developed, you know, some haters, because we are comparing aspects of his physique today versus where they were 5 or 6 years ago, or even a couple years ago, because of all those things, it changes how we view the competition. It changes how we view them. But I'm saying if we viewed them with a clean slate, a fresh set of eyes, don't be so sure that you wouldn't have had Phil on top.
Man, I love the thought you've put into this. You know, I have followed you since about 2005, and that's back when you guys, you and Bob Chick, had started Pro Bodybuilding Weekly, later turned into Pro Bodybuilding Worldwide. And at that time, I rediscovered bodybuilding in my own life. You guys introduced to me who all these key players were. I learned who Silvio Samuel was. I learned who Jay Cutler was. You know, I learned about all these guys through the interviews you did, through the conversations you guys had, the breakdowns of the shows. And your passion came through those airwaves to me, and it built my own passion. A question I've had for you for a long time is, where has that passion come from, Dan?
So, you know, growing up, I was always the kid who would read the bodybuilding magazines and attend the local events. You know, I grew up in the South Florida area, which is still where I live with my family. But we have a pretty good market down here on the bodybuilding scene. And Jim Mannion's NPC has a strong presence, you know, really all over the country. But in particular, the Florida competitions are pretty strong. So I kind of grew up, I had a neighbor, we would go to these events and just watch the shows. And then things kind of escalated for me. I was on a business trip in 1998. And I was back in the financial services industry back in those days, shortly after I had graduated college. And while I was in New York, I happened to be staying across the street from the Madison Square Garden, which was also hosting that year the Mr. Olympia contest. It was the final time the Olympia was held somewhere other than Las Vegas. And I arranged to get myself some tickets. I was really excited to see my first big time bodybuilding event.
Yeah.
And it was the night Dorian Yates stepped to the podium and announced his retirement. Ronnie Coleman won, defeated Flex Wheeler. It was his first of eight. And he ends up starting that whole reign. However, circling back to that 98 Olympia, that was sort of my first introduction to this world at that level. And it was, I'll never forget it. I completely drank the Kool-Aid. I loved every ounce of it. I love the energy. I love the enthusiasm. I love the inspiration in terms of the people that I met that weekend. It was such a cool collection of individuals. I remember meeting all the magazines that I had ever read had come to life. This was long before social media. We weren't even really surfing the internet at that point to speak of. And so every you know, Nasser Al-Sambadi and Sean Ray and, you know, those who preceded them, they were all there and they were in the contest. And it was such a surreal experience for me. So anyways, after that event took place later that night, there was a kind of a VIP reception, which I still don't know how I got into it, but I ended up there. And while I was there, I met a bodybuilder named Darum Charles.
Yeah.
Now, Darum Charles, of course, a lot of you guys know, he's a successful Trinidadian born bodybuilder. He had just moved his family to South Florida. Turns out he lived not far from me. We got to talking and swapped business cards, and I hired him to be my trainer. And we spent a number of years doing that. He even got me ready to do some local NPC contests. I was never a great competitor, but I did do 4 or 5 local events just to kind of stick my toe in the water and see what that world was all about.
Yeah.
And so I did that. And then Darum invited me to his house one night, and he said, he and his wife sat me down and they said, you know, Darum could really use some help on the business side. He hadn't kind of, you know, figured out a way to make a living in the industry beyond, you know, his training clientele and so forth. So I began the process of trying to find him an endorsement deal. And I said to Darum, I said, what are you trying to achieve? He says, I'd love to be a weeder athlete. So, of course, I didn't know better. So what did I do? I went to my office the next day. I looked up the number for Weider headquarters in Woodland Hills, California.
Yeah.
And I said, well, if you want to be a Weider athlete, I guess I should call Joe Weider. So I picked up the phone. I called Joe Weider, left a message for him. A couple hours later, I had a voicemail back, and I saved the voicemail for like a year. It was Joe Weider.
You're kidding me. He called me back,
and here I am, some nobody. He calls me back, and we had a conversation about the sport, about bodybuilding, about Darum, and all of the above. And it was, I'll never forget the conversation. We were talking about, at that time, that was when the midsection distension was starting to kick in around the sport. We talked about that. And then he says to me, well, you know what? You should do some writing for my magazines. And I said, I would be honored to.
Wow.
So at the time, their editor-in-chief or their editorial director was a guy named Vince Scalisi. So he put me in touch with Vince. And next thing you know it, I'm writing a column for Muscle and Fitness called Bodybuilding 101, and which was more of a training-oriented thing. And then from there, I started doing, more writing, because that was by trade. I'm a writer. I had a journalism degree, so it was a chance to kind of combine a couple things that I really love, bodybuilding and journalism, and bring those things together. And then a few years later, a guy named Richard Enlow, who had a production company, decided to put the Olympia on pay-per-view and needed somebody to host it. Richard and I had a mutual friend. Her name was Kelly Ryan, the fitness competitor, who, of course, her story is well documented.
Oh, yeah.
Kelly said, told Richard that he should reach out to me about possibly hosting. So I got involved and I started doing some of that. He was very kind to kind of give me a shot when I had very little credentials to do so. And then from there, that led into one thing, and then the next, and we don't need to go through the whole story, but that's basically the birth of how it all started for me. And ironically, as we're talking to you, 1998, that was 20 years ago. So that basically set forth a 20-year journey that brings us to today. And whenever I'm anywhere, no matter what I do, I always am quick to recognize Darum, because without Darum, I'm probably still doing asset allocation models for a financial planning company in South Florida. But instead, I turned a hobby into something that suddenly started to pay some of the bills. And next thing you know it, it kind of turned into something even bigger than that. So the lesson to that, and to everybody out there, is, if you have the opportunity to merge your passions and bring together all the things that you're good at, that is, the most authentic way to live. And in this particular case, thanks to Darum and some, crazy circumstances, we were able to start doing that. And that's been my story for the last couple decades.
Wow. That's so cool. I didn't know a lot of that. So this is you just don't know how excited I am listening to all this. Like I said, I followed you for this length of time, and I've tried to almost emulate some of the qualities that I've seen in you that I respect. And one of those things is I've always seen you bring a very high level of integrity to the work that you do. And I see you talk about bodybuilding with a great deal of respect too. Can you talk about integrity in journalism, integrity in media, and why that's important to you?
Well, when we started doing this, there was no social media.
Yeah.
And the reason why that's important to point out is because back in those days, in order to achieve any measure of access or opportunity, you had to actually get hired by a company. Hmm. A Joe Weider, a Steve Blackman, a Bob Kennedy. They had to hire you. So there was a vetting process. You had to be, looked at, and they had to determine that you had something to offer. And for that, then you got to do things like interview these athletes and get close to these events and sit in press pits and take pictures and do all the things that media gets to do. And as a result, that created a layer of integrity and accountability. I think that's probably a better word, accountability. And there was a price to pay if you didn't establish a level of quality and professionalism. And as a result, we worked very hard to, respect our bosses and deliver the fans and the audience something that was, credible and worthwhile. Now, the arrival of social media, that's when the whole story changes. And by the way, there are plenty of people in the post-social media world who are doing great things. Guys like yourself who care about professionalism, who show up each and every day and communicate with people the right way, who build meaningful relationships, who demonstrate levels of trust and all that. That's not a common theme these days. There are folks out there that do that, and for that, I will always recognize those folks. However, the reality of social media has enabled everybody to become their own media outlet. You know, you have your own Instagram account, you're now media. You have your own YouTube channel, you're now media. You have your own podcast, you're now media, and so on and so forth. And it's all stuff that you can just do. So what's happened is it's made it harder for you know, a lot of the, you know, the OGs, you know, the originals there, to sort of, you know, to separate themselves. It's become a little bit of a different dynamic. So now you have people out there that it's all about clickbait and it's all about trying to, you know, just get a response and get followers and get views. And we measure everything from that standpoint.
Yeah.
And so it's a little more salacious. It's a little bit less accountable. It's a little bit less responsible. So because of that, as all that's been going on, to answer your original question, I feel like those of us who get it, who want to bring something credible, I'm even more focused on bringing integrity because of that, because I want there to be a true separation between the people who really respect the craft and really respect the idea of the notion of trust and integrity. To me, that's really, really important. So I don't know. I just feel like, and I'll be honest with you, there's people out there that have much bigger audiences than me now. There's people out there that have millions of followers. And look, I'm not a social media aficionado. It's not really my thing. I just try to do the best work that I can, and hopefully folks pay attention, and hopefully it creates opportunities. And if it does, great. If it doesn't, that's okay. If you're looking for somebody who's going to be able to drive millions of clicks, you know, there's probably, there's definitely people that do that much better than I do. But for me, I just feel like do quality work and hopefully people will notice and it'll create other opportunities. But yeah, the arrival of social media has had a profound impact on not just media in terms of the people who do it, but also in terms of the way we monetize it. You know, sponsorships and the whole revenue model has changed. It's not as easy to monetize media as it used to be. Every company out there feels like they don't need media the way they used to because they all have their own followings. They have their own social media.
Yeah.
They would rather spend, you know, $10,000 of their January budget on developing their own social media than giving that $10,000 to a media platform to put up banners and links and commercials. It's just a different mindset. So it's changed a lot. And I applaud everybody who has worked hard to kind of rise above the fray. And look, it's all important. Even the Instagram celebrities, they're all important. They all play a key value in driving interest in what we do. Nobody is better or worse than anybody. They all do it differently and everybody's got their own style. But for me, that's kind of the way I've tried to go about it.
That makes sense to me. You know, while we talk about journalism, one of the phrases that you use, one of the things you said is important, is building relationships. Can you explain to us a little bit about what that means as far as being a media person and why it's important to build relationships?
Well, building relationships and building trust is, that's the whole thing, right? That's the holy grail of everything that we do. We need to be able to sit with people and have them know that if you have a conversation with them that they don't want made public, you have to be able to respect that. You can't put yourself first always. If I were willing to put myself first over the years, the stories that I could have had, the clicks that I could have gotten, you know, it would have been unbelievable. But for me, I've always had a big picture mentality. And I think that's my advice to everybody is think beyond the moment, think beyond the clickbait, think beyond that initial desire to sort of have that Facebook post or that Instagram post. Think about the ramifications. Think about what it might mean later. Yeah, you might score a big one today, but tomorrow you're not going to get that job. Or tomorrow you're not going to get that story because that person's never going to want to talk to you again. And don't be the guy that people are going to feel like when you walk into the room they got to be careful what they say or how they say it, that you're going to, you know, that you're going to burn that bridge. So that's just what I would say. I just think relationships are so important because at some point we're going to be doing something else. At some point we'll be doing something different. Hmm. And you want to make sure that when you are there doing whatever that next thing is, that, that Rolodex that you've worked so hard to build, that you can still call those people, that you can still count on them, that you can still have a meaningful relationship. I always think about that. And I think a lot of people do. I don't think I'm alone, by the way. I think there's a lot of people out there that feel the same way. I think we all have, a lot of us have that desire to think beyond just the moment. But I think a lot of people get in trouble. They pick up their phones, they tweet something, they post something, they publish something, and it causes a lot of problems for a lot of people. And yeah, they might score a short-term victory today, but in the big picture, 9 times out of 10, they end up losing for it.
That makes sense. And that's what I thought you were getting at. So basically, you know, hard work and have faith in the fact that hard work is eventually going to pay off. As far as companies, you know, that are doing this kind of stuff, companies that are looking to grow their own platforms versus, you know, trying to outsource that to somebody else that's doing that at a professional level. I guess it's not happening everywhere, because I did see recently that Digital Muscle, your site, was acquired by Wings of Strength. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So Wings of Strength, owned by a really good friend of mine, a guy I talk about trust, somebody that I have a great deal of trust for. His name is Jake Wood. He's out on the West Coast. And he kind of made his arrival in this industry really focusing on women's bodybuilding. He's very passionate about it. And his love of women's bodybuilding is very different than you might think. He has a real appreciation for the amount of work that these female athletes put in to their bodies. Let's face it, if you and I go to the gym, and we try to put on as much muscle as we can, later on that night, you'll go to a restaurant, you'll go to a bar, you'll go to a movie theater, and somebody will celebrate your muscle. They will praise you for your physique. They will tell you how great you look. That's what people do when they see muscle. However, when women do that, they are often, you know, looked at with disrespect and criticism.
Sure.
And so I think Jake has a real place in his heart for making sure these women not only are afforded the respect that that they've earned, but also that they are given the platforms to tell their stories and so forth the way that the male bodybuilders and the other divisions get to do. So circling back to this deal, so when Jake and I first started dealing with each other years ago, it was all about female bodybuilding. But over the last couple of years, he's expanded his footprint into other corners of the bodybuilding world. Hmm. He has you'll notice his company, Wings of Strength, is the presenting sponsor of many, many events, a lot of them promoted by Tim Gardner, around the contest schedule, really throughout the country and even throughout the world. I think they have an event coming up in Romania. And these are events that have all the divisions in it, you know, female, fitness, bikini, physique, even some men's bodybuilding divisions. And they're all funded and sponsored by Wings of Strength and Jake's team. So a few months ago, he got with me and we were talking about trying to expand their presence digitally to do some things. Mm. And he wanted to bring me aboard to help him with that. But I called him up and I said, listen, the thing that you're trying to create, you know, I've already built over the last few years. I've built this media platform that's very diverse in nature, you know, content spanning everything from nutrition and training and fit recipes and bodybuilding coverage and training videos and, you know, all these things that would span the supplement reviews, that would span sort of all corners of the fitness landscape. And I knew that's what he was trying to do. So I said to him, you know, we can maybe roll this into your umbrella of influence. Ah. And he loved the idea. And the reason why I did the deal is because, look, let's be honest. I have built what I've built, but I've done it, you know, on a shoestring budget. I've had some great supporters, companies like Redcon One and House of Pain and other companies that have come on and have provided a measure of support and from the very beginning, and I'm very grateful for that. But I've done it, you know, on a modest budget.
Sure.
Jake has resources that I don't have, and he's also in a position to really help us as a brand and as a media destination go places and reach levels that probably I wasn't capable of, given the resources that I was working with. So my feeling was, if we took what I've already built and our great network of content providers. We have some great people providing tremendous content all over the industry. And if we bring it all together, that it would become a far more formidable thing. So Jake has gained ownership of it. Now, I am still the editor-in-chief of it. I'll continue to run it, and I'm proud to continue to do the work and make it grow and help it grow and work closely with Jake and the Wings of Strength team. But this is going to be really fun. So that's where that came from. And so digitalmuscle.com. Hope everybody will check it out. And, you know, I know you have a lot of listeners out there. So if anybody has any content ideas or, you know, even various ways they want to support it, you can always email media@digitalmuscle.com and provide your thoughts. But going forward, digitalmuscle.com is a part of the Wings of Strength family, and a family that I am now proud to be very much a part of. And I appreciate you asking me about that, because everybody involved in that deal is really in it for all the right reasons. And Jake's a tremendous, really advocate, and he's become a bit of an ambassador, really, on many counts in terms of providing opportunities to men and women around this industry. So that's pretty much what we've been able to do with that.
That's so cool. So it sounds like you're going to be able to strengthen their voice, and they're going to be able to allow you to do even more of what you do well. So it sounds so mutually beneficial. It sounds perfect, really.
It's definitely a win-win. And I appreciate that you see it that way, because sometimes when you're really close to something, you wonder like how it's viewed. But that's exactly what we're trying to achieve. We want to create a win-win where Wings of Strength will now be consumed, if you will, by people that perhaps weren't following what Wings of Strength's doing and all the great projects that they have, because there's far more to Wings of Strength and that brand and that company that people realize. And then on the digital muscle side, yeah, the fact that we're able to add a little bit more horsepower to what we're doing, it's tremendous. It helps sponsors, it helps content providers, and it also helps a lot of the events that we're close to, events like the Mr. Olympia. It'll enable us to reach more people and to do a lot more creative things, and even improve some of the content, create some original series, some programming.
Nice.
And all that. So that's what we're hoping to do. And by all means, Scott, if you ever have any ideas and you want to become part of it, would love to talk to you about that as well.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'll definitely think about it, and I'll certainly be in touch in the future about that. Also, I just one more note on that. I can say that I had the opportunity to go to the Chicago Pro Wings of Strength show this year, and it was by far one of the best pro shows that I've been to. You know, outside of the Arnold, outside of the Olympia, that was certainly a really well run operation, and I could see why this is such a good marriage. So I definitely congratulations to you on that. In a completely other direction of media, and this is more of a mainstream media topic, you are the co-executive producer of a new film. We got to see the trailer at the Olympia, and I've since done some research. I've got to look at a little couple bits and pieces, trailers online and stuff. This film is called Bigger. It is the story of Joe Weider. Can you tell us a little bit about this? And when are we actually going to get the opportunity to see this in theaters?
So the film is in theaters on October 12th in select theaters. It's I don't know if you want to call it a limited release, what the terminology is, but it's going to be in like the top 10 or 15 markets initially, and then it will evolve from there. The film is the real life story of Joe and Ben Weider and their journey that spans back since the 1920s when their story started in Montreal. The story is not a documentary. It is actually the first ever scripted theatrical film themed on the bodybuilding world. It is also the largest budgeted bodybuilding themed production of all time. Wow. And I only say that as a tip of the cap to those involved: the producer, Steve Lee Jones, the executive producer, Eric Weider, who of course is Ben Weider's son, Joe Weider's nephew, the director, George Gallo. It's a tremendous group of people that came together to tell a beautiful story that spans about eight decades. And it covers from the very beginning, back when Joe was a young boy and he had this vision for the way the world would one day be, a vision long before anybody even dared to consider that stuff. That was back when athletes still looked like Babe Ruth, and it was sports teams didn't have trainers or training rooms, and you know, Hollywood stars looked nothing like Dwayne Johnson or Arnold or Mark Wahlberg, and muscle was very much not, it was frowned upon, I should say, in Hollywood. And so Joe sort of introduced this premise and created a little newsletter that he sold for 15 cents and got a big distributor to, you know, to believe in him. And along the way, he had a failed marriage. And eventually, of course, in 1961, he would marry Betty Weider, who's played in the film by the great Julianne Hough. Tom Arnold is in the film. Robert Forster, an Academy Award nominated actor, plays the older Joe Weider, a really talented actor from Wales named Aneurin Bernard, who had just come off a project called Dunkirk, which is a big movie. So that was a great cast. Victoria Justice is in the film. And Kevin Durand, another really talented actor who you guys have seen all over the place. So we were very fortunate to have a tremendous cast and a great group of people come together. The movie was funded and they shot it last year. And it's a really artistically well-presented story, and the set design and the hair and the makeup and the wardrobe. It's a what I think is a pretty beautiful film, and it has layers to it that a lot of people I don't think are expecting. So we've had some screenings. It screened at the Cannes Film Festival. It screened in New York and LA. And of course we have the Vegas screening. I wish I had known in advance. I would have gotten you to that screening so you could have seen it. It was definitely, it's been a fun process to be a part of. And my role in that is early on, Steve Jones, the producer, the one who really did the heavy lifting in this project. He's with a company called Beholder Productions. I've known Steve for a long time. Steve made a movie a number of years ago called You Don't Know Jack, a story about Dr. Kevorkian.
Oh,
it starred Al Pacino. Al Pacino actually won the Golden Globe for Best Actor for that movie. And he called me up the day after Joe Weider died because he had read about it in the LA Times. And we started talking about Joe and what an amazing story his life was, from dealing with poverty and anti-Semitism and racism and all the other issues that he was directly attached to, and kind of taken on this whole crusade that he dedicated his life to. And he, you know, what a great movie this would be. And he explained to me in that conversation that in order to make a movie like that, you need access to the family. You need access to Joe's family, because the only way you can make a credible movie, and the only way you can get real directors and real actors and real funding, is to have the rights to the story. Because if you don't, you're not viewed as a credible project.
Ah, okay.
So fortunately, I knew the Weider family. I knew Eric and those folks. So I brought the parties together, and that sort of set forth my involvement in the film. But make no mistake about it, Eric Weider, Steve Jones, and others did a ton of work and really deserve the lion's share of the credits for bringing this thing to life. But it'll be in theaters pretty soon.
That's pretty cool. I've had the opportunity to talk to a couple people now who were actually on set during some of the recording, and I heard like John Hansen, for instance, he was telling me right after he had gotten back from that, how the detail that you guys were putting into particular aspects of it to actually try to mimic exactly the way things were, you know, during certain events, like with contests and stuff. I'm excited about this. I'm sure that everybody in the bodybuilding community is going to be excited about this. When this does come out, I'll be sure to help promote and spread the word about it. And I'm definitely going to be there. I'm sure that it'll be in my area. We have plenty of theaters, and I'm sure it's got to be at least a couple of them. And,
well, I'll tell you what, I want to hop in real quick. You mentioned John Hansen. I got to give John some love on this, because so one of the scenes we shot in the film was the 1970 Mr. Olympia. Now, keep in mind, this is not a movie filled with bodybuilding scenes. This is a movie about Joe's life.
You're right.
However, we felt it was important to shoot the 1970 Mr. Olympia, because that, of course, was the event that sort of introduced the Arnold fandom here in the U.S. That was the night Arnold won the Olympia for the first time. And the reason why that was important, that was extra special also, because that was the night, that was the day on set where I invited a handful of my bodybuilding buddies to come to set.
Yes. And those are the guys I've gotten a chance to talk to.
Right. Now let me tell you about John Hansen. So John got in his car. We were shooting that scene in Birmingham, Alabama, okay. at a great vintage, beautiful, historic theater out there in Birmingham. And John got in his car, drove 9 hours to spend a day hanging out and watching us shoot that scene. He was not in the film. He just drove 9 hours just to kind of witness it all. And then he drove 9 hours back, I think that same night. I don't even know if he stayed over. Hmm. And that is how passionate and authentic and dedicated John is to classic bodybuilding, that he would do that. And of course, he's right. It was a special day because the gentleman who played Arnold Schwarzenegger, Colin Von Moger, whose name I recklessly left out a minute ago when I was rattling off the names, he and Sergio Oliva Jr., the son of Sergio, came on set and played Arnold and Sergio in those classic pose downs. And watching that combined with the set design, just as you pointed out a minute ago, it was so surreal watching all of that.
Wow.
And I'll never forget that John Hansen drove a combined 18 hours to see, round trip, to see and observe those scenes being shot. So that was pretty cool.
I believe that he was at the original show too, wasn't he?
At the 70 Olympia?
I want to say he was. I want to say that if that wasn't the one, he was very young, like 13 years old, and he somehow got tickets.
John, are you that old, man? John, I know you're listening. I know you're not that old. John looks like he's 30, so it's hard for me to think he was at the 1970 Mr. Olympia contest. But
I want to say he was like 12. I want to say it was something like that. He was a young kid. I'm gonna fact check that with him right after the show.
All right, guys, I did fact check this. I was totally off. John's first Olympia that he attended was 1977, and he was 14 years old. Okay, off by 7
either,
years.
Either way, I know that he has he's a historian the sport like no other.
He's so important too to what we do because Peter McGough, my good friend, the late Sean Perrine, who passed last year. These guys were, or Peter McGough is still doing great work.
Yeah.
But there's a shortage of people who really are carrying the flag of bodybuilding history and remembering that. And it's a term that I'll credit to Sean Perrine. He's no longer with us, but he created this term. They called it the Iron Age. He had a website dedicated to it. And there's not a lot of people out there anymore who really Carol, or who really tell those stories. There's a lot of people who care about it. There's not a lot of people who carry the baton and tell those stories. And the work that John does in doing his podcast and interviewing these guys, I'm one of my proudest people always say, like, what's the coolest thing that you ever got to do? My proudest thing is that I've gotten to interview all 14 winners of the Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
And I did 13 of them on Pro Bodybuilding Weekly. Of course, you cannot do that anymore. Sergio and Larry are gone. And so the fact that I was able to do that along with Bob Ciccarello was something I'm very proud of because, you know, like John, I care a lot about that, you know, the story of bodybuilding. And that to have been able to do that is pretty special. And John Hansen's doing great work kind of keeping those stories going.
Absolutely. And that's the way I feel about the work that you're doing today, Dan, because at the end of the day, down the road, what we call the present, what we just saw 2 weeks ago, that is going to be distant history. And people are going to want to look back at that. And when they do, they are going to be able to turn to people like you. They're going to be able to turn to the media that you've created. And that is going to be a reference for this point in history, which will, you know, one day be long gone. So that's why I have a huge respect for you, and I really appreciate you taking the time because I know you're a busy guy. You've got your hands in so many different things with bodybuilding. It really means a lot to me that you could stop by and talk with me today.
Well, Scott, you've spent a lot of time saying really generous and nice things about me, but I'll be honest with you, man, it's been such a cool thing what we all get to do, right? I mean, this industry is very unique in nature, and it's not always easy. The landscape can be complicated at times. There's always divide, whether it's different organizations or different, you know, corners of what we do or on the supplement company side. But at the end of the day, we all just love this community. We love the opportunities. I've always said the bodybuilding industry is the ultimate entrepreneurial playground. When you look around at the number of people that are making a living in this sandbox, if you will, whether you are an editor, whether you are a commentator or a web designer or a photographer or a trainer or a bodybuilder or a gym owner or any of the countless ways that you can make or a coach, a contest prep advisor, or whatever it is that you do, there are, and I'm not even naming a third of them.
Sure.
There are so many ways that people are supporting their families off of their love for this industry. And sometimes it's tough. Look, we've all have, I'm right there with anybody, and we have our good years and we have our rough years. It's just, it's an up and down, but at the end of the day, we're a part of something that's very unique. And I just and I appreciate, you know, all the nice things you had to say about me, but I'll throw it right back on you. I know you've taken a very professional approach. Every encounter I've had of you, whether it's by email or even when we got to spend some time together for a minute in Vegas, you're doing it the right way. So keep doing what you're doing. Continued success, and don't hesitate to reach out if there's anything I can do for you. And the movie, of course, Bigger, it's in theaters on October 12th, the website is biggermovie.com. If you go to biggermovie.com, you guys can see the trailer for the movie. And I think we're starting to put the listing of the theaters for the initial release. So you guys can check that out. And Scott, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. And the other website is digitalmuscle.com, correct?
Yes.
Anything else that we should mention while I got you here?
No, man, just keep doing your thing, brother. I appreciate it, man. It was a privilege to talk to you, and keep up the great work.
All right, guys, for another episode of Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally with Dan Solomon. We'll see you soon. All right, guys, that was Dan Solomon. Stay tuned for Jonas Gigers. I can't stop. All right, guys, up next with me today, NPC super heavyweight Jonas Gigers. I had an opportunity to see him at North Americans most recently. This dude is he's definitely a super heavyweight. The guy is huge. He's also a client of Dave Calix. So I thought we'd get him on today, learn a little bit about him, what he's doing, what his plans are, and maybe we can talk a little crap about Dave too. How you doing, Jonas?
Good. Thanks for having me on, Scott. I appreciate it. I'm excited to chit chat with you guys, and yeah, we'll definitely give Dave some shit while we're on the air, you know.
Perfect. All right, man. So yeah, I had a chance to. Now, I didn't get a chance to meet you in person. You know, we were all so busy over there at North Americans, but I did get a chance to see you compete. Now, that was your most recent contest. What did you weigh on stage there?
We had a little game plan to come in just extremely shredded for a super heavyweight division. So I came in at 246 for that show.
Okay.
That was about 10 pounds less than I did about 3 weeks earlier. I had the Viking Championship here in Utah and ended up winning the overall there. I want to say I weighed in about 257 is what I weighed in at that show. That was August 11th is when I did that one. I just wanted to come in, I mean, see where it's at. I mean, there's something about being shredded as a super heavyweight that we kind of get, you know, not a lot of us bring that, we'll say. And I think that kind of stuff should be rewarded a little more sometimes than it does. But, you know, it was good to see. There's some good guys out there, you know, there really was. Big Ron, he works with Physique Inc. And James, I believe is how you say his last name is Judd. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, I think so.
And he works closely with Dave as well. So it was cool to be able to BS with Ron a little bit backstage. He honestly looked really good. There's a couple others in the top lineup that I liked, but didn't really have that sharpness, you know, so I was a little bit disappointed on where they ended up putting me. I finished seventh. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was there. Yeah, so I saw that go down. But, you know, here's the thing. At that level, you never know what's going to happen. You never know who's going to show up. And, you know, if you're up there, if you're battling – it could go very differently the next day. You know, I like that idea too. I like the idea of bringing in a super heavyweight as conditioned as they can be, because I guess at the end of the day, I mean, size is definitely impressive, but I'm always drawn to the guys that are most conditioned. And so I definitely thought that you had that going in your favor. To just kind of go back, kind of learn a little bit more about who you are. How long have you been competing for? And you're a tall dude. Did you start out in super heavy, or were you a heavy that had to continue building?
Yeah, I definitely was. I started out in the NGA, believe it or not. I think that was I don't know how many people ended up starting out in that. Are you familiar with the NGA?
Honestly, no. No, I'm not.
It's the National Gym Association. It's a natural league. 2006 was my first show. I ended up winning. I mean, bodybuilding was always appealing to me. There's just something about the respect for guys that look like that. I remember even being a kid, just like, holy cow, you know, and playing football all my life. I was very, very respectful and, you know, admired a lot of those guys that were big and really in shape and athletic and quick. And so I won a show in 2006, the overall as well in that NGA. And then 2007, I did another one and got my pro card, my second show in a natural division, natural league there.
No kidding.
Right. So I didn't really know, let's say, what I wanted to do with bodybuilding, but I had some friends that were really into it and just kept kind of pushing me. And I played some college football down at Dixie State. So it's a local college here in Utah. And once that kind of stopped for me, then I just was continuing on with gym life. I think it seems to be a you know, routine thing almost with some bodybuilders that you just stay in the gym, you know, once they were originally playing sports.
Yeah.
And I just kept doing my thing, and I didn't really have any plans on bodybuilding. And then my buddies just kept hitting me up about it. So I said, you know, okay, let's do it. You know, you guys really think, you know, they just kept saying you're going to win. You're not even training like a bodybuilder. Let me help you do this and this. And, you know, I was training more like, you know, I was doing a bunch of hang cleans and push jerks and, you know, football movements, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, once I kind of got into the more isolation movements and them showing me some stuff. Yeah, so I won there. And then from 2007, I took quite a long break, and I was able to went to the Arnold Classic, actually. A girl I was dating at the time, she was competing at the Arnold Classic. So I went out there and I was able to meet Sean Roden.
Okay.
And they were sponsored by the same company, VPX, at the time. And I was kind of helping with some stuff with that. And I remember meeting the owner, Jack. I think he still owns that company. Do you know?
I'm not sure, to tell you the truth.
I believe he does. And Sean was there, and he came over, you know, kind of, you know, nothing crazy. I mean, I wasn't familiar with the guy, but man, he was super cool and talked to me, you know, for 2-3 hours.
No kidding.
Yeah, for at least a few days. And he lined me up with Dave, you know, after that that trip. He ended up, you know, giving me his number, and we stayed in contact, and we're just BSing off and on. And I honestly, I owe a lot to Sean, and I can't tell you, I just got to give him a big shout out real quick for winning the Olympia. That was so awesome, and I don't think it could have happened to someone more deserving, and just one of the most genuine guys in the industry. I mean, when I had no clue where to go, what I was going to do, I just was kind of on the road telling him, hey, this is something I'm really interested in. I don't know where to go from here. And that's all it took. And he kind of, you know, let me line you up. And at that time, Dave and Sean were working together. So he was cool enough to, you know, get me in contact with Dave. And then we started on the road of the NPC.
And I will note too that I've seen the pictures when Dave was working with Sean, and he did a hell of a job with him. He had some really nice conditioning working under Dave's tutelage. I think that your story, where you're at right at this point, Sounds like a lot of people that I talk to, people that are interested in somehow being involved with bodybuilding, with the fitness industry, and they don't know how, they don't know where. It sounds like you definitely were in the right place at the right time, and you got an opportunity to meet the right people, and it kind of has it's led you to where you are today, huh?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, without that one little trip and meeting Sean, I don't know if I ever would have been able to meet Dave, and then Dave's, you know, rolled into meeting, you know, a couple other really cool dudes in the industry. Stan McQuay,
he's helped me
a bunch with posing and, you know, texting back and forth, getting closer to shows, giving me ideas. And obviously I work real, real close with Dave, but those guys go hand in hand. So it's a good team, that whole Physique Inc. Thing they got going on. They got a lot of good guys. And, then it kind of rolled into a show with Dave that we did, I want to say the LA Championships in 2011 was my first NPC show. And I believe I did one right before that.
Okay.
Here in Utah. I think I want to say I placed third or fourth. I'm in my office right now. I'm trying to look at these stack of trophies, you know. That,
is this bragging? Is that what I'm hearing right now?
No, you keep them as like reminders, right, of where you started, I think.
And, absolutely. No, and, I've got a few sitting around here too, but it sounds funny. You're like, oh, I'm just going to turn to my stack of trophies here.
Right. No, I didn't mean it like that, but I know
you didn't.
There's some good ones from, I'm looking, you know, where I placed like almost, you know, last place to winning the overalls. And it's just fun. It's a good reminder. I've never really had an office before, so the trophies were never out. You know, I always just had them in boxes or down in storage. And
yeah.
And I got my little business going, and I was able to get an office in this new place that we built. And yeah, it's fun. It's fun to come in here and kind of think about, you know, where things started. And, yeah, so I did one show there, and it looks like I placed like third. It looks like I'm looking at the trophy here.
All right.
And then went to the LA Championships and got a big eye opener there. I think I placed. John Ward did that show with me.
Oh, no kidding.
I was able to talk to him for a little bit, and another cool guy. And then I placed. Oh, I want to say I think I placed 10th there.
Okay.
Out of like, I don't know, 15 guys or something like that. So it wasn't the, you know, ideal situation, but it lit a fire in me to where I was like, oh, okay, this is life for people. This is what they do. They live, breathe, and sweat this stuff, you know?
And so from there, it sounds like that must have been when you upped your level of commitment. Can you talk about what that level of commitment is? Because I know that you not only do this, you're like, you've told me you're working 6 days a week. You've got a family to attend to, which obviously takes a lot of time too. What's it like doing everything that you need to do to be a national level bodybuilder today and take care of all those other responsibilities to be, you know, a decent human being on top of it?
Right. That is hard, you know, because I have some good friends in the business, and not taking anything away from them, but you know, they're able to go in the gym at any time they want. And I don't have that. I have to make sure stuff's very scheduled, and sometimes I only get certain amounts of time. And then I got to go to soccer practice for my little girl. Then she has a tumbling competition or horse riding. I mean, there's so much stuff that I do, but like I said, at the same time, I try to make sure I don't ever let any of that stuff have too much waver on, you know, because I mean, Ronnie did all that stuff, man, and I always watch him and what he was able to accomplish with doing all that, and it's impressive to me even more, you know.
Yeah,
I just knew I didn't want to be one of those bodybuilders that was my only direction. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
I wanted to at least have some strategy on other options. I didn't want to have a two-bedroom apartment and, you know, and just some chicken breasts in the fridge, and that was about it, you know. I wanted to be able to have a good life in case things didn't pan out the way I wanted. I think that's why I kind of had a delay in going from NGA into the NPC, and I did a bunch of schooling in the middle of that, and got a bunch of certs. I went down to Texas A&M for a little bit, did some industrial fire training, some ROCO rescue training, and, you know, kind of like a Steve Kuklo, similar background. I have some EMR training and some hazmat stuff, so just wanted to make sure I was able to provide for my family.
That's what you do. You are a firefighter, correct?
Yeah, that's one of them. One of the things I do with my company that I work for. I do work for Holly Frontier. It's I'd say medium sized refinery out here in Salt Lake.
Okay.
And I'm in our refinery fire brigade, and rescue program is all voluntary based, but I do work there as a safety representative too. So that's kind of where it started for me. And I've been there. I've been working at that place, slowly climbed up the lines. I started there pretty early. I want to say I've been there since 2006, and then I've changed jobs 7 or 8 times just within the same company.
Okay.
So, but yeah, the latest one is a safety representative. And then it's been great. I work at a 980 schedule, and I'm able to have every other Friday off, and the weekends I'm able to really kick butt in the gym and do a lot of grinding that way. But yeah, I do that. And then I also train some people once I get off my normal job. And
really?
I do. So
wow.
Once I leave work there, I'll go train. You know, believe it or not, I actually have a few people that are, I don't take on too many, as you can imagine. You know how much stress it puts on you when you take on clients. They need to have good communication. You know what
sure,
I mean?
Sure, sure.
And you got to be available. And some of these guys that I see that come to me, and you know, they're getting like 5-word responses from their coach on a text message that, you know, they sent like a half a paragraph, or they called and then they didn't answer emails. That's frustrating to me. I usually won't take on more than 5 or 10 people, just because of that reason. You know, I don't feel like it's fair to not give people the attention that they need. I remember being that person, so it's kind of always stuck with me, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bodybuilding here. So I'm just trying to wrap my brain around the amount of muscle that you carry. Off season, where do you sit weight wise, ballpark? And what kind of food does it take to eat in order to maintain that level of muscle?
It's off season, as I started prep for this last year. Let me go back just a little bit. When I really started turning up the commitment, like we had talked about, was after that 2011 show. I didn't compete again. This is how long it took me to get to where I'm at until 2014, in the beginning of 2014. And I got up to about 312 pounds.
Right on. Wow. And you're how tall?
I'm about 5'11", 6 foot, just in between there, 5'11 and a half.
That's a lot of weight right there. I want everybody to, I guess, listening at home to kind of comprehend what that means to you. You know, if you're going to be a guy who is 5'11", 6 foot tall, I mean, this is the kind of weight that it is going to take to become a pro bodybuilder. You're a tall guy, and that's a freaking lot of muscle. And that's why I'm asking about the food too, is because, you know, for guys that are smaller, I'm sure, you know, it doesn't take nearly as much. I've worked with some big dudes, and it's mind blowing how much you can eat.
Right. That is something that I really had to, I don't even know when I first started that I comprehended the amount of food it was going to be. And then as Dave and I pushed forward and got, you know, some of the carb timing right, and you know, the nutrition based around the workouts, and I mean, I realized at some points that, I mean, believe it or not, I was eating 12 ounces of protein, and then I want to say 16 ounces of rice post workout, and then usually a monstrous salad just to help process it. And you eat that in one sitting after a protein shake, and then just see how you feel, and then do that 6 more times in a day. That was something I had to really get used to. But I was never a big eater, so we had to train my body to get used to that. And Dave had a good way with that. He, you know, I remember calling him a few times, like, you know, are you sure? on this amount of food, you know. And he did exactly what you did. He kind of laughed. He's you know, worked with so many people that I'm sure you heard that before. And he's like, yes, just let's stick with the program. You know, you have any issues, you just call me. Very attentive coach.
Yeah.
Always has been there for every question, any concern that I have, any issue I was feeling. I started hammering. I said, okay. At one point, I'll never forget this. Dave actually, he had so much faith in me. I was blown away. I was like, I can't believe this guy believes in me so much, you know, I'm struggling at some points to see what he's seeing. Hmm. And I was struggling on food wise, and he knew it. He kind of caught me, you know. I was doing one of those typical, you know, clients. So yes, I'm following this 100%. He called me out and was like, there's no way you were doing what I'm saying. And if you want to just stick around and waste time, then you might need to find another coach. And he actually hung up on me. I'll never forget
Holy cow.
Right.
And Dave is such a nice guy. He's not the kind of guy right. that's going to just hang up on people. That had to be an intense moment for you.
Right. He's never, ever even had, you know, a remote voice raised of any, you know, concern or disdain for me at all. And so for him to do that, and I think it was more frustration that he's like, this kid has so much potential that he is just kind of sitting here in Mediumville and not doing anything, you know, to get to where he wants to be. And then I would call him and tell him where I want to be, and then I'm not following our plan. So by the time I ended up really buckling down, me and Dave we've never had to have another conversation, we'll say, like that.
Nice.
He says eat it. The cool part about Dave too is he's not one of those coaches that just sits and tells you, you know, eat, you know, be quiet, grind. I have a concern, especially now that we have learned my body so well. I call him with these times, and I tell him, hey, this is how I'm feeling. This is where I'm looking. This is what, you know, I'm feeling like we need to do. What are your thoughts? We go back and forth, great communication, and we adjust stuff almost all the way up into prep and, you know, rotate carbs, you know, fats, pending blood sugar levels and stuff like that. What's going on? It's great. I mean, it's hard to be extremely shredded at 260 pounds. You know what I mean? And he's got great ability to do that. I mean, at every show I've ever been at, it seems to be a common occurrence that someone asks me who my coach is, at least one or two in the back, just because of the conditioning I bring. And, you know, that's like we talked with Roden, and Dave likes to focus on that. So I give him, you know, mad kudos for pushing that, because I think a lot of the bigger guys, and especially, you know, bodybuilders, we have issues sometimes on how much weight we're going to drop early on until we realize, like, hey, the separation is what's going to bump us placings, you know.
For sure. Yeah, especially it's the, like you said, it's the bigger guys. They're the ones, I think, who are most afraid of losing scale weight. Hey, tell me about this recent trip I saw you made. I think this was right before North Americans. You got a chance to head down to Armbrust Gym in Colorado and meet up with Dave and meet up with Adam and get some training in.
Right. Yeah, we went down. One of my good friends, you know, you've heard of Big Russ Allen?
Oh, absolutely. I know his name. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so me and him have been friends now for, I just want to say, going on like 6 years. And my wife and his wife get along great, so we were able to go down there and kind of hang out with them. And Russ actually even loaned me his Jeep while we were there. He's such a good guy.
No kidding. Tell him to come on the show.
I will. I'll chit-chat to him about it a little later on here this week. We were going to talk to, because he just actually proposed to his girl.
So nice.
We had to catch up on some stuff, but yeah, so we went down there, and I just was getting some dialed in stuff with Dave on training. And those last few weeks, man, you need that push, you know.
Yeah,
especially when you're low calories. And Russ has always been really, really good on his posing. It's very, very smooth transition, very you know, symmetrical body composition, and he's good. We have a good enough relationship where he kind of lays it out, you know, hey, you know, your waist is wide, we got to bring this in, you know, let's try this and this option. And he knows Dave real well, so we all just kind of sat down and did a bunch of posing and Doreen was out there, so Doreen was awesome too to take some time and give me some input and go over some of my you know, he's a chiropractor too, so he's talking about some of my stuff with my back and some hip stuff and some massage ideas on what would work best to bring out some you know, different muscle bellies. And and then Adam was there, so I always got to take some pictures with Adam. And
nice.
I did a few shows, so Dorian, Adam, Russ, and actually even Sergio, we all did junior nationals together.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And for the for the listeners, that I mean, I know mostly everybody's been following along and paying attention, and we recently had a chance to talk to Adam, but we're talking about Adam Young and we're talking about Dorian Haywood. So just to keep you guys all up to date, if you aren't following along and aren't into bodybuilding as deep as we are. So yeah, carry on, please.
Right. So we were able to do junior nationals together, and that was where I first met Sergio.
No kidding.
We were in the same super heavyweight division. Russ actually won that show in the super heavyweight division, and Dorian won the heavyweight division, and he won the whole show. So it was fun to see, you know, some guys that I've been able to talk to and stuff do well. I ended up taking fourth, and then Sergio, I think, beat Bieber by a couple points on that show, and then trying to remember, there were two other dudes in the mix of that, but it was really good. It was one of those super heavyweight divisions that, I mean, it was a lot of focus was on that, because every one of us that was in that top five call out had really brought in some conditioning. And Russ has always been that way as well. He always has focused, you know, he knew he wasn't going to be, he used to always tell me this, he'd always say, oh, I'm not going to be the biggest guy, but I promise you I'll be very sharp, you know?
Oh yeah. And he's one of those guys too. When he gets in great shape, his legs, he has those quads that get ridiculous when he's lean.
Right. And they striate all the way up. It's crazy.
They do.
So
yeah.
it was fun to do that. And plus now I've been able to be friends with Sergio since that show. So like when I go out and see Dave, you know, Sergio moved out there to California, and
yeah,
I'm able to stop and BS with him for a little bit when I've been out there, and we tried to coordinate a couple training sessions, but you know, he's been busy, but he ended up popping by a few times, and we spent about an hour BSing. And yeah, I get to see, you know, Brad and Dexter's out there. It's just a motivating place. If any of you guys have never been to, you know, Venice Gold's, you guys, it's so worth just popping in and just seeing some stuff, you know, maybe mid-afternoon, 2 o'clock. It's a very good time, and you get some of those, I can't even remember what those guys call them. I think they call them gym sharks or whatever. They're kind of out of there, and it's more the bodybuilding mentality, a little bit like mid-afternoon. And yeah, it's all that stuff on the walls, that's been fun. So yeah, I was able to go out there and see all those guys in Colorado, and you know, go see Phil's gym. And that, have you been to that gym?
I never have. No, I haven't. I had a chance to talk to Dylan on one of the shows a little while ago. And from everything that everybody says, everything Dave says and Adam and various friends that have been there, I hear it is an amazing place. Was that the first time you went there?
No, I've been there. Another supplement company that I was sponsored by was working a booth up at the Rocky. And so I went up there before and was able to train. That was 2014 as well, right when I started really branching into getting the size and feeling right and feeling like I was, you know, where I needed to be. I remember, because I didn't know Dorian and I didn't know Adam at that time, but I went in that gym, and both of them, you know how bodybuilders are, both of those guys are kind of like, oh, who's this guy? You know, where did he come from? Like,
Right.
Just
plus, you're taller. Eye. You're taller than both of them. You're bigger than, more imposing than both of them.
Right. And they're both, you know, they're both really, really well built too. So of course I'm doing the same thing. I'm looking back over like, oh, these guys got to be doing something. You know, what are these guys going to do next show?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was really fun to be able to go in that gym. I think Dylan's the one who ordered a bunch of the equipment. He's the owner.
Yeah.
So the leg stuff is second to none on any gym I've ever been to. It
yeah,
it is just so old school, but also like new school, not like rusted or beat up. It's the old school equipment, but like, you know, he's must have ordered it from, I don't know where the heck he ordered it, but it's just the old school equipment, but like brand new, you know what I mean?
That's cool. Like just well maintained and everything, huh?
Yes, exactly. Or he found somebody that's able to make this equipment like how it used to be.
Really? Really?
Yes. And it's just awesome. I love going there for anything I can do with back or legs when I go there is what I try to hit, just because there's so much stuff there that I don't get a hit, you know, in a lot of the other places, or the other places are just so beat up, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So you are in Utah, and that's your home of bodybuilding.com. I hear that fitness is really huge there in general.
Yeah, it is. It really is. There's a lot of really fit people, to be honest with you. Came here, you'd be surprised. It's funny for me being in this state, and then I don't really notice how many pretty in shape people there are. And then I went to... I'll just say this just to keep it real with you guys, but I went to Pittsburgh and it was did North Americans. And it was my wife's and my anniversary the day after the show. So I wanted to make sure we went and saw the city, and I took her out for a nice dinner, and we went to the Pittsburgh Zoo and just went and saw, you know, a bunch of the old steelworker places and the rivers and the bridges. I mean, it's a really cool city. So as we were there though, I couldn't believe it. Just Utah has a very fit community. There was a lot of, we'll say, large people in Pittsburgh. And my wife made a comment. She kind of nudged me, and she's like, wow, there's a lot of out of shape people here, huh? And I'm like, I think Utah's, you know, we kind of get blinded because so many people are into it here. We don't realize, you know?
Yes. Welcome to the Midwest. It's the same here in Detroit, too.
Is it really like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that for a lot of people, health isn't the priority. You know, income isn't necessarily super high in a lot of places. You know, factors like that. And the fact that we have like a donut shop in every corner doesn't help. Now I got to ask you, out there in Pittsburgh, I got a chance to eat these sandwiches. It was like a hoagie that was like a burger stuffed with fries and coleslaw. Yeah. Did you eat one of those while you're there?
Yeah.
That's why if we lived there, we would look like that too.
Right. Yeah. It was like what was it? Permani Brothers or something like that?
Yes. Yeah. That was it. They're good though, weren't they?
They were, you know, I was shocked that I didn't think I would really actually like the fries on the sandwich, but it was good. And we did a big nacho plate. I mean, obviously I was post show, so I was eating really heavily. And my wife was kind of like, wow, you know, this is very filling.
Yeah.
I just kind of laughed. I'm like, yeah, you know, this is what we do. But she made a similar comment to you, like, man, if we lived here, we'd have to watch what we ate, you know?
Oh yeah. No kidding. So, What's next on the agenda then? You had North Americans, you got to eat some good food, you're back home, back at work. What are you going to do from here?
So I am actually going to make an appearance with Dave down at Nationals. So we got set 7 weeks from today. We are going to go out there. I sent you a video. You saw that today, right?
Yeah, you're looking huge, man.
Yeah, I've gone up, let's see, so I was 246 and I weighed 271 today, and my conditioning's relatively good, but I really pushed hard, Scott, on that conditioning for North Americans. I almost want to say I look better for my Utah show, and I think Dave would agree with this. We've kind of done a lot of talking.
Okay.
I was really full, but also just as dry. The only thing that was a little bit harder on me for North Americans was my glutes came in more. I was able to get striations all the way through on the side, you know?
Yeah.
But I had a little bit better look, more three-dimensional when I was at the Utah show. And like I said, that was, I think, 257. So we're trying to, I mean, Dave and I have a plan where we're going to, I never had to be a guy that did fasted morning cardio. My body just didn't work like that. And I kind of, you know, watch all these guys on social media, and they're in there just dying and dripping. And I don't know, I must have a very, very active metabolism, because for me, I mean, 30, 45 minutes of cardio and I'm, you know, ready to go. I mean, I could have jumped on stage, you know, a week after my Utah show and been relative to what I looked like on September, the first week of September for the North Americans. Just it was more, almost had to eat more to maintain where I was at.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
So, but yeah, I want to be about 13 pounds heavier.
Okay.
Is what we're looking at for Nationals. So we can roll in, what, 256? We're looking at 260 is where I think we're gonna try to bring me in. And then obviously we'll make adjustments depending on water and what we do. And that's another thing. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'd never had to really mess with anything with my waters. And a lot of people seem to have to do that. So there's no water drops. There was no
really
any restriction on that kind of stuff for me. Nothing to make sure I had any fluid.
You're kidding me.
Fluid out of my body. Dead serious.
You're kidding me. So you drink, how much water do you drink a day on an average day?
I would say 1.5 gallons on an average day.
Okay, so you're telling me you still drank that much water when I saw you on stage the day of North Americans prejudging.
So I stopped drinking water at about 1 in the morning, midnight, roughly.
Wow.
And I was drinking all the way up until then. And then I was obviously sleeping. I woke up at about 4 a.m. and I ate 3 burgers, believe it or not. And a large fry and 2 pieces of cherry pie.
Nice.
And shockingly, it didn't do a damn thing to me. It volumized me for maybe an hour.
Really? That was it?
That was all I was able to get from that.
Huh.
And it's, you know, like I said, I've been away from the stage for 4 years. So Dave and I are kind of, you know, getting our feet wet again on some of the stuff that we've had to figure out before. You know, four years is a long time to not be, you know, fully stripping stuff down and getting back on stage and seeing, you know, remembering what your body does, what worked best, what did we do, you know.
Oh, yeah.
What brought us, I mean, at Junior Nationals, if you saw some of those pictures, I think when you had Dave on the show, I mean, really, really tight midsection, and I was able to eat a lot of carbs, so we kind of were worried about some spilling stuff. But for that prep, I ate a lot of carbs before I went on stage, and I looked really, really good. You know, I volumized well. I think we just had to spread out a little bit more. You know, and some guys can go real crazy with it, and they talk about going upwards to, you know, 1,000, 1,500 grams of carbs, you know, to 2,000 before they get on stage. I don't really see the need for that, but everybody's different, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've seen it work for some, and I've seen others just glaze over, whatever you want to call it. Like, it looked like they had no lines, you know. So I mean, it's just, it's such a hard balance to try to figure out. You don't want to spill, you don't want to, you know, lose all your volume, but at the same time, it's just such a happy medium right between being full and dry and still have some muscle volume. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, man. Yeah, that's the, and that's where you're lucky to have Dave on your side. That's, you can let him worry about that, right?
Right, absolutely. So we just kind of come up with a plan and, you know, we'll stick with that plan. And I think we got it nailed down. We've been, he's on the phone with my wife and myself. Hell, I bet we've talked 7 times in the last like 3 or 4 days. No joke. Just small things that have come up and how I'm feeling. You know, adjusted some food with me. I was feeling really, really just tired, you know, so we were able to get me some fruit and some more carbs and stuff. And then, you know, I just explode in my workouts and it's great. But yeah, like I said, very attentive. And yeah, so you'll see me at Nationals here in 7 weeks. And I think you'll see an improved package. I think you're going to see some density, you know, with the volume, because it was hard. Besides Ron, I out-conditioned, you know. I thought Cade looked pretty good. Zeus, is that how you say his last name?
I'm honestly not sure at this point. It's all becoming a blur to me. I've seen so much since then.
Right. But anyways, I thought he looked pretty good. I liked his look, but I just wasn't super, you know, understanding where they were wanting things with, you know, the judging as far as, you know, rewarding conditioning. And that's kind of why we did that. I mean, North Americans, most of the time you look back and Russ won his pro card there, and a couple other bodybuilders that really brought in some dialed conditioning, and they seemed to like that. So it, you know, didn't work quite as well as we thought in my favor, but you know, it's always good to be conditioned. You can't ever say anything bad when you go on, and I felt great. So, you know, and I had a lot of fun. Honestly, it was good. I got some time with Dave, and we flew out there together, and I was able to get him to stay in the same hotel as me, and we were able to BS. We went out for some good food. We had some pasta after.
Nice.
So that was awesome.
Well, that's cool, man. Of course, we want to give a shout out to Dave. Anybody else you'd like to give a shout out to while I got you here?
Gosh, my family, a bunch of my friends have supported me along the way. I won't go on, you know, listing my names, but my wife and my kids, it's, you know, as you go through this and the amount of food that you got to prep, and my wife helps me a ton with that.
That's cool. I mean,
Dave talks to my wife as much as he talks to me. So it's, you know, cause she's obviously home and helping a lot with the food and getting things dialed in and changed. I owe her a lot with that kind of stuff. Cause I mean, I do a lot of the grilling, but the small work, right? The packaging and getting stuff set up for your meals in the next day.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a team effort. When you have a team that's, you know, behind you when you're doing this, it becomes a lot less stressful. And I just, you know, I'll leave this message for young bodybuilders out there. I mean, you got to want it. And nobody's going to, you know, kind of force you to eat your food. The hour and a half in the gym is the fun part, right? It's the making sure you don't miss the meals and, you know, messing up on stuff when everyone else is eating garbage. You're kind of staying on track with your stuff. I think that's the hardest part, because everybody at that younger age, when kids can be, I don't want to say kids, but like early 20s, you know, that guys can be really good. They get involved with, you know, thinking they're missing out with, you know, their friends and watching them eat a bunch of that stuff. But it's so important. I mean, if you guys have a thought, you know, stick with it and watch what happens. It's crazy.
Hell yeah. Well, thanks for your insights, man. And thank you very much for coming on to kind of share what the game plan is and go over how you've gotten here. Because I think that I think a lot of people will appreciate this story. And from here, guys, I encourage you to follow Jonas. If they want to follow along with what you're doing, where can they find you on social media and stuff?
Facebook, it's Jonas Jytrus, and then my Instagram is just at Jonas Jytrus, and then my first name is actually Chris, so I believe on my Instagram profile at the top it'll say CJ, just the initial CJ Jytrus.
Okay.
So, but if you want to find me, it's just at Jonas Jytrus, and no one really has that last name often, so it should pop right up. No one really has an issue finding me, but I'll keep some stuff posted through the prep and some stories on where we'll be and what I'm doing with some foods. And yeah, you know, I appreciate you having me on, Scott. It's been fun.
Absolutely, man. My pleasure. And thanks for coming on and sharing all this with us. Guys, if you want to follow along with Jonas, I'll have all of his social media stuff tagged in my show posts and in the liner notes at iTunes. For another episode of Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally with Jonas Jytrus, NPC Super Heavyweight. Look for him at Nationals. We'll see you guys soon. All right, guys, thanks for listening to another episode of Advices Radio, only at the Advices Radio Network. Stay tuned later this week for a new episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear with Skip Hill, S2H, and myself. I hear the guys from Clinical Muscle are recording their next show, so you should be hearing from them soon. I know that Doc Ogden had been busy with his day job, being a doctor and all, but the guys haven't forgotten about us, and they will be back. Also, I have a new program. We've got the pilot episode in the bag. I'm just putting that together now. That will be featuring Dave Crossland, and I'll be there backing him up. So, guys, all sorts of cool stuff lined up. Be sure to follow at Advices Radio Network on Instagram. Follow the Facebook page, and you can go to advicesradio.com to visit the forum, ask questions for the shows, go to the shop and buy a t-shirt, support us, and, you know, just follow along. Thanks, guys, for all your great questions. Thanks for listening, and we will see you soon. Keep grinding.
If they freed me from this prison, if that railroad train was mine, I bet I'd move it on a little farther down the line. Far from Folsom Prison, that's where I want to stay. And I'd let that lonesome whistle blow my blues away.